All right, everyone. All right, tonight we wanted to move on from the sukkah to the lulav. So the lulav is a mystery. And it's always been a mystery to me. And from what I've seen in my research for this year, it will remain so, as we will discuss. So if you look at the lulav, the Asherot, so obviously the first thing that strikes everybody is how just bizarre this is, right? As we do all kinds of strange stuff in this religion, but this one really seems outlandish even by our standards, right? Different plants tied together, but not this one. Keep the citron separate and hold them together and flip it over and shake them, and it's really comic, almost, especially if you guys are those of you that are able to daven in a minyan, you know, looking around at the whole minyan of people very solemnly, you know, shaking their things. I don't know, you have to be amused. So, but what is it, right? You know, it's clearly a big deal. So let's take a look around. So you take a look around at Mefarshim and stuff, and you look classic Gemaras and Midrashim, and what you find is that everybody bypasses a pshat. You know, and so by pshat over here, I don't mean, well, I'll say what I do mean. By pshat over here, I mean things that have to do with what's actually happening, right? As we spoke about, well, we spoke about the sukkah, so we did speak about a lot of symbols and a lot of, you know, kind of deeper meanings to it and such. But those were things that were actually happening. And as I actually have schach, as I literally built a shelter that I'm in, and I have a roof that is a providing me shelter, but still has holes in it to expose me to the greater universe that I'm in. So those are symbols, but they're right there. You know what I mean? It's very, the shofar is a symbol for someone to wake you up. It is a horn that toots, you know what I mean? So, it, of course, there's a deeper symbolic activity. I don't mean symbolic like not real. I mean a symbolic and real thing going on, but it's also very much there in the thing you're looking at. I'm looking at a horn that's waking me up. I'm looking through the schach and seeing the stars. I'm seeing the universe that I live in inside my shelter. It fits. It's very immediate, or It's a symbol, but it's contained very clearly within the items that we're dealing with. Whereas when you get to the lulav, so you start looking around, and whoo, they're gone. Oh, the lulav, go look at the midrash. The lulav, oh, it's Am Yisrael. You have people with Torah and no Maisim Tovim, and people with Maisim Tovim and no Torah. People with Torah and Maisim Tovim, that's like the Esrog, and people with no Maisim Tovim and Torah. This one has flavor. Right, it has food, it has a flavor, but no smell. Smell, but no thing. So, wow. Right, there's no, that is pure symbolism. Right, there's nothing immediate about that experience at all. In no way are you holding Am Yisrael in your hands in any real sense. Okay, there's no way to connect to that on an experiential level. It's a purely symbolic thing that you could think about while you're doing the lulav. You could think about combining all the different aspects of Am Yisrael together, and they're machaper, but they're all machaper on each other. Even the Amaratzim, everyone's machaper on each other, the tzaddikim and the non-tzaddikim. You could think about that, and that's a very meaningful thought to have about the Jewish people and being Mamlech Hashem and all the six directions, the Jewish people, but it's nothing to do with what you're actually doing. Okay? Nowhere you could examine your Lulav and Esrog all you want. You're not going to find Klal Yisrael in there. I mean, maybe you will, but okay, not. And so the next midrash. Nope. It's the lulav is a human being. It's a person. And the lulav is the spine of the person. And the hadassim are the eyes. And the aravas are the lips. And the esrog is the heart. And it's a whole human being bringing them together to be mamlech HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I love it. Also very true. And a lot to think about there. A lot to unpack. Right? Why those four particular parts of a human being? Right? Why spine, eyes, lips, and heart? Why split it up that way? Can I connect it to Chazals? right? There's a lot of thinkiness that you can do here, but again, not a lot of experience to have. Can I think about combining the entirety of me as represented by these four species and waving them to show Hashem's Melech? Okay, of course I could. But again, it's not connected in any real sense with what I'm actually doing, what I'm actually holding, what I'm actually looking at. Okay, and then you get to the next midrash. Oh, no, the lulav, it's a Kadosh Baruch Hu. The lulav is Hashem because of this pasuk. And the etrog Hashem because of this pasuk. It's all Hashem, 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 Hashem. And I don't know what you're going to do with that. Okay, good. But so you're lost in a world of thinking and symbolism, very much divorced from your immediate experience. And that to me is always very disappointing. So I'm looking. Let's find a pshat, something. Somebody to give me something about this. So we're going to go two different directions. The second one, please God, we'll try to connect with some of the things we've been talking about these last couple days. So the first direction is Rav Hirsch. And Rav Hirsch says something here that actually my father-in-law spoke about this year. For those of you who are not in the know, so my father-in-law, Rabbi Green, he has a podcast that you can listen to wherever you listen to your podcasts. It's sponsored by Squarespace, of course. Just look up Rabbi Shimon Green. I think it's called like Thoughts and Lessons or something. He's a few podcasts. So there in one of the Sukkot ones, this year he talks about this idea. And Rav Hirsch discusses exactly the same, almost word for word, some of the parts of the articles. I want to say it like this. Rav Hirsch says that the Sukkah and the Lulav work together, they complement each other. And what they're doing is they're fixing our relationship with the material world. Rav Hirsch says like this. A Sukkah is, like we said, a temporary dwelling space. It's a temporary shelter. And the idea of leaving our secure homes and venturing out is a way of severing our, what Rabbi Green refers to, our addiction to the material. Okay? We're camping out. We're making ourselves. We're reconnecting with the temporariness of our stay here and trying to sever our attachments, our unhealthy attachments to this world. To the extent that we've become obsessed with this world and it's become an end in itself, and we've lost touch with how temporary all this is and transitory our whole experience here is and all this material stuff is. So you go to the sukkah, experience of kind of camping out and recognizing that this whole experience that we're having is very much a passing one, and thus hopefully freeing ourselves from our addiction to the material. Okay? That's the idea of Sukkah, and Rabbi Green spoke about way better than I ever could. And also Rav Hirsch, by the way. Pretty much all the sources do a way better job than anything I'm going to say. So that's stage one. Stage one is where we find ourselves beforehand is a little too immersed in this world, taking it a little too seriously, focusing on it a little too much, relating to it a little too much as an end in itself, and centering our lives about it, around it, to an unhealthy extent. So we go to the sukkah to move away from it. Right? Rabbi Green said it is to break our addiction to it, to the material. But now what? Okay, so Rabbi Green did this all in the sukkah conversation. Rav Hirsch takes it to lulav. Rav Hirsch says like this. Let me give you the symbols of the lulav. And this is the closest to a pshat level symbolism that I have seen. Okay, we're going to see. It doesn't work out 100%. But it is this is the best I've found. Okay, and if anyone finds something better, then please let me know. He says, the Arba Minim represent the representative of the gifts of nature that Hashem has given us. How? There's three categories of the natural world in terms of our usability, in terms of how we use it and how we benefit from it. Okay, that's going to be the issue, is that there's four dalad minim, but three categories. He said certain things that Hashem has created for us, we just enjoy. Like light or air. We don't have to do anything. They're totally ready for us. They're just provided with zero effort on our part. You just walk around and you're enjoying the light, you're enjoying the air. And he puts in this category, smells. Smells are something that you just enjoy. You literally have to do nothing. Just on the way to the outdoor shul where I daven now, they have this night jasmine plant in the street. And every night I'm walking to shul and whew, it's so good. I don't know if you guys know what I'm talking about, but it's so good. Something about the fact that it's nighttime also like enhances the whole experience. It's great. It's magical. It's this magical scent as I'm walking down these cobblestone streets here in Tellstone. It's incredible. And what do I have to do for that? Nothing, not a zippo, zero. Okay? He said that's the idea of the hadassim, of the smell represents all the gifts of nature that are free, 100%. He said on the flip side, not flip side, there's a second category of things that are prepared for us, but we also have to do something. Right? And this is stuff that has food, like the dates of the date palm. All that stuff is food. It's not free, like a smell. I do have to go pick it and eat it some way. There's work. I'm not going to eat an apple just walking a shul tonight. I'm going to have to go to the apple tree, pick it off, you know, take a bite. There's an interaction that has to take place. The apple's been cooked up for me. It's ready to go, but I'm going to have to go over there and take it and enjoy it. Okay, so it's a hybrid sort of, a mix of what Hashem's providing through nature and my efforts in going and taking it. Okay, that's a second category of natural gift that we have. And the third category is stuff that nature basically isn't doing much for you. But because Hashem has gifted us with the intelligence and creativity and ability, we could turn it into stuff. And this is stuff just like wood, represented by the arabos. There's no smell to offer you. It didn't cook anything nice for you to come over and eat. It's just wood. And so wood, nature's not doing much for you. It's just purely potential that we now can go. So this is like in the symbol of it, it's like all us, basically. So the three categories nature has is stuff that's all God, just gifts. You do nothing. And on the flip side, the arabos, where you do everything. The arabos are just there. You'll have to turn it into something if you want to. And the hybrid in between of things like fruits, where it's provided for you, but you have to go get it. Okay, a hybrid combination. Okay, now that I thought was pretty good. Okay, pretty good. Fertilized, because now the actual species I'm holding represent, each of them represents a category of which they are a member. Right? These species really are members of these. There's really three categories of stuff out there. And these species really are members of those categories and can represent them. And I'm holding in my hands all the gifts of nature that Hashem gave me. Now, the problem is the esrog. Now, I'll just tell you what he said. You guys can look it up. It's in the Chorev. And there's a footnote there that makes it even less intelligible, and to my understanding. But he says that the esrog completes categories 1 and 2. Right? It completes the two categories of the smell without the... Right? Of the smelliness free stuff and the fruitiness combo me and God stuff. Okay. I don't have any idea what completes means. And if you look on the bottom, Diane Grunfeld put in a footnote that it seems even more... I didn't understand what he was doing either. Okay, so the esrog's a little bit of a kasha on this theory because it looks like there's only three categories. I don't know what I need an esrog for to complete the first two. Okay, I mean, technically there is a fourth category. Right? Knows that technically there are things that both provide smells for free and food for you to interact with. So I guess it's not like, just like I didn't need that category. It's just something that happens to fall into two of the categories. Why does it get its own species? Why does it get its own representative? And maybe because of the perfection of it, is what he means by completeness. I'm not sure. You can look, you can think about it. If you can come up with an explanation, I would love to hear it. Okay, but Rav Hirsch says now we can understand what the lulav is. The sukkah helped me sever my unhealthy addiction, my unhealthy ties to this world. I left my home, I left my permanence, and got this sense of the temporary that I'm just passing through this world. And now I can look at the material, I can take all the gifts that Hashem gave me, all the gifts of this material world that He gave me, and I can use them to serve Hashem. I can use them to declare Hashem the Melech. Meaning, now that my unhealthy attachment addiction is broken, now I can do the lulav, pick up the lulav and grab and say, oh, now I can embrace the material world again. Now the material world is not some evil that I need to flee from. The problem was my relationship with it. And once I've severed the unhealthy relationship, the unhealthy addiction, now I can go back and pick it up and embrace it. Embrace the material world as a means by which I connect with my Creator, which is, of course, what it was made for from the beginning. Okay? And it's such a beautiful, beautiful explanation of the love itself. It's the tightest, like I said, it's the closest to a pshat level relationship with the lulav that I saw anywhere, and the connection of sukkah and lulav, beautiful. Okay, so that's approach number one for the lulav and esrog. But I have a different approach, because even that is not fully the experience. Even that feels a little thinky to me. Okay, seeing each of the speeches representative of one of the categories of gifts of nature. It's better than, it's way less out there than the other stuff, but it's still somewhat cerebral in a certain sense. So let's go back to our experience of the lulav. Our experience of the lulav is as something silly, something absurd, right? Something crazy, seemingly loony. Right, you just have to go to your local lulav and esrog guy. Okay, I went to one of the local guys over here, like one of the guys, you know, the esrog guy. He's got the table full of esrogs, and people come in from out of town, and they pick an esrog, right? And the guy gives them the esrog, and he's got the, you know, the big magnifying glass and light, you know, and he's in his chair and he's examining, and he has this tool set, a set of tools. And he's pulling out like smaller and smaller brushes and these like wooden dowel things, and he's, I don't even know what he's doing. He's brushing the thing and brushing off the pitom with different sized things and scraping and poking and what he, he's like, oh, this is good. I was like, oh, great. He's like, 375 shekels, you know? It's like 120 bucks, right? Crazy. This thing you're going to throw in the garbage in a week. The whole thing's so loony. The whole experience is so outlandish and crazy. Okay? And that's our experience, and I don't think anything that we've heard, even Refersh, who's the closest, makes it any less crazy seeming. So if you look in the Mefarshim, I found two things this year that I had not seen before, and I like them very much. The Zohar talks about the lulav of connecting you to something called Das Elyon. Okay, Das Elyon is a concept that I do not understand, okay? But what it means, literally, is you're working with an awareness and understanding that's beyond you, okay? It's not your das, it's das elyon. It's not seichel enoishi, okay? It's not human logic, it's an awareness and a consciousness that comes from, that's elyon, that's literally above you, from the heights. So if you look in the Midrash Tanchuma, to back this point up, it says, it talks about Shlomo HaMelech. It brings a pasuk where he says, Arba lo yadati. I don't have it in front of me, but you look in the Midrash Tanchuma and Parshas Emor. It's Midrash Chaf. So it quotes a pasuk indicating that he refers to the Arba as lo yadati. I didn't understand the four. And the Midrash says that's the four species. And at first it praises him, after all, it says, after all of his chachma, he couldn't get the arba minim. Okay, so if you look over there, it talks about the psukim and the limudim, but if you look in the perushim there, so he says that it's just beyond the seichel enoshi. That here, Shlomo HaMelech is representative of the heights of what human intellect can understand. Okay, he is like the symbol for seichel enoshi, for the capacity of the human mind to grasp things. He couldn't get it. And as I'd heard about the paraduma, right? We have famous thing, but this I never heard. This medrash I never saw, that he couldn't get the lulav and esrog. I said, nah, I felt, first of all, you gotta feel good. me and Shlomo, you know, we're together. I also don't get this thing, okay? But what is the Midrash telling us? And I think maybe it's what the Zohar is intimating also, which I, you know, take that with a grain of salt because I don't really understand the Zohar. But for sure this Midrash is clear, written in Hebrew also. So for sure this Midrash seems clear to me. Which is, the Lulav and Esrog seems crazy because it is crazy to you. Okay? How do we experience, and now let's go back to our discussion of the last 2 days. Okay, what have we been talking about with this existential sukkah thing? And specifically yesterday's talk. We've been talking about how I'm constructing a world for myself, but I'm leaving holes. I'm leaving holes so that I can get glimpses of this larger world that exists outside of the boundaries of what I've constructed for myself. Okay? With an understanding and awareness and a consciousness that what I'm experiencing in my world is a tiny fraction of the actual world. With the hopes of beginning to let that world in, letting in some awe and majesty and wonder, and do my best to try to expand it, you know, like we discussed yesterday. So the limits of my world, the limits of my seichel, what it was. So what do you do in your day-to-day life? What happens when things come that are for outside of your range of experience? What happens is that they look crazy to you. That's how it is. Picture for a second, put yourself in the headspace of a totally secular person. Okay? Someone who is unaffiliated and unexposed. Okay, and have them follow you around as a religious, you know, halakhic observing Jew. Have them follow you around for a day. How much of your behavior is going to seem absolutely loony to them? Okay? A lot of it. From your washing your hands in the morning, for sure through your davening experience, tefillin, talis, your tzitzis, you're learning, right? For those of us that are learning, everyone's learning, but to those of us that are, they're going to come, you're going to sit down across from another guy and argue very heatedly and very intently and very deeply, right, about cows and holes and marriage contracts and all sorts of things that seem to have nothing to do with anything. It's all going to seem mysterious and nuts. And what is he going to say at the end of the day? This guy's a total nut job. Now, why do we seem crazy to him? Because all these things that he's watching are outside what his mind is capable of understanding at this point. The life that he's built has no room for the activities that we're doing. Whereas for people like us, where the religion and religious law is already such a given, so other people who have different systems, we may not agree, but it's within our capacity to understand it, and at least in a general sense. We don't necessarily assume they're crazy, they just have a different system than we have. Sometimes we think they're crazy. So that's what we're looking at. We look at the lulav, okay? When you look at the lulav, tomorrow, you're gonna pick up your lulav, and you're gonna say, this is crazy. Look at this thing. I don't get it. I don't think anybody ever got it. All we have is drushas and ramazim. Shlomo HaMelech couldn't get it. And yet, the Torah is telling you, giving you this mitzvah, that this makes sense. If you had Das Elyon, if you had a clear consciousness, if you had awareness and understanding, complete awareness and understanding of this universe, Lulav and Esrog would make total sense to you. It seems crazy to you because you're still living in your small world. Now, happens to be, no one's ever gotten there. Nobody ever got there. No one's world ever, even Shlomo HaMelech, whose world was as big as a human being can imagine, even he didn't get all the way to Lulav. But that's good because Lulav now is a symbol. It's a symbol of how big this world is. You're holding Lulav Esrog and you're saying, listen, that's how I live in a universe that is so vast and incomprehensible to me that this makes sense? This is rational? If I understood what was going on in this world, this would make sense to me? Wow. Wow. I have no idea what's going on here. If you ever had a thought that you had figured this place out, that you know, basically understand what's going on in this place. The Lulav and Esrog is a stir muchlatas to the whole thing. Absolute demolition of any theory you had that you had some grasp of reality is this lulav and esrog. Because whatever reality you've built for yourself, I promise you, this doesn't make sense. And yet it does. In actual reality, it makes perfect sense. So the lulav and esrog then, the very crazy, this is why I love it so much, because the very craziness of it is the point. The total lunacy, the insanity of holding trees and bushes and citrons and is supposed to be loony. It's insanity as a reminder that the world is insane in a real way. That the world is so, what's really going on here is so far beyond anything you could possibly imagine. It's a world where lulavs and esrogs make sense. It exactly runs together with our concept of the sukkah. We spoke about yesterday, being in the sukkah, looking up at the stars, and getting some glimpse of a universe that's so much more vast than you could imagine. And the lulav is the raya. The lulav is a message from the stars. The lulav is a message from that universe. Look how far you have to go before you start to grasp what's going on here. When this lulav starts making sense, and come back to me. All right? How far do I need to go? When will I see to the edges of this thing? How will I know? We had a Rav Isby, I think it was Sans Snifter, it was a Gerush Kolo, and he taught also Nor Sameach. And he was like the mentor of the yeshiva I was in Zichron. He used to give Shir Klali. So he told us once about the Maram Shif. The Maram Shif is classically very cryptic. It speaks in like half sentences and stuff on the Gemara. And he said, the Maram Shif's a good litmus test. If he's making sense to you, that means you're in the sugya. You're good. If he seems like a mystery, you need to go back and work more. So that's like the lulav. But the lulav is a litmus test that you're going to fail every time. But in failing it, you're reminded that this world is bigger and more mysterious than anything you could possibly have imagined. So I'm building my sukkah, I'm leaving my house, and I'm building my sukkah and recognizing that I have to build a small world to live in, because I'm still small. But I'm open to the idea that this universe is huge, and I'm trying to see it, and trying to let those stars in. And I'm holding this lulav and esrog in my hands, and I'm saying, wow. I'm just blown away and astonished at what this means. This makes sense out there? This is something that's rational and logical? Wow, it should just be a mind-blowing thought to have. Okay, so everyone, when you pick up your esrog tomorrow, feel the ridiculousness of it, the insanity of it, and tell yourself, wow, that's the world, that's the universe that I live in. I live in a universe where this makes sense. It should be humbling and fill you with a sense of wonder and awe at this incredible place that we live. Good afternoon, everybody.